Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Chilluminati Podcast, episode 235, I think. Is it 35? It's 35 or 36, either one. Anyway, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by the Mandalorian and Grogu of L.A., Jesse Cox and Alex Fasciani. Hello, boys.
That's incredible. I have always thought of Alex more of a Grogu, so that checks out. Look, I'll be honest. I wouldn't mind living Grogu's life.
Yeah, I just wheel you around in a little floating carriage and feed you frogs.
I can eat. I can just, like, fuck shit up.
Yeah.
There's debate over how smart I am. Like, I can just do whatever I want. Like, I'm just inside my own little, you know that little, you know that movie Orphan, where the girl ends up being, like, an old lady? She's, like, ends up being, like, a, like, 45-year-old con artist.
Spoilers, by the way, for that movie.
Oh, yes, but I have not seen that movie. That's okay, though.
Whatever. Nobody's missing out. Like, go read the article about the real story. It's way better. That's what I feel like Grogu is. Like Mandalorian is, like, imprinting on Grogu because Grogu is, like a chihuahua. Like, he's got the face of a baby, right? He's, like, soft. He's gentle. But actually, he's, like, 75 years old. And he's like, ha, 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 give me another one of those frogs. Ha, ha, ha. I can use the force. Ha, 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 ha. Like, him and Luke are like, what's up, man? And, like, Luke understands what Grogu is. He's like, Grogu, we are equals. And, like, and that's how Grogu is. He's like, you have to choose between being evil or good, Grogu. And Grogu, like, whenever Din Djarin shows up, he's like, ah, like, it's a totally different guy.
It's because it's like a pet. He's like a little pet.
Yeah, he's like code switching. Grogu wears armor, dog.
Oh, God. How did you get so deep into this analytical?
I'll tell you this. I didn't write it down. That's
no,
for sure.
No shit. You didn't write it down.
It's just like, and I stand corrected. He is the most Grogu amongst us.
Sure. Yeah. It feels like you've just thought about this a lot.
Not really. I'm just kind of flying by the seat of my pants. And to that end, let's use that, whatever it is, to segue into this advertisement for our Patreon at patreon.com/Chilluminati Pod, which is a Patreon and is available for you to patronize. So please go over there and give us your money to keep this show happening. And in exchange, we will give you free PBS tote bag-esque rewards like ad-free episodes and access to our archive of episodes of Rotten Popcorn. Mathis and I and Jesse were just talking about how Mathis wants to show us Money Plane really badly for some reason. Yes. Mathis is like a...
Why do we keep letting him make these choices?
Mathis is like a Doctor Who creature that is like, he like absorbs negative knowledge. Like, every movie that from the canon that I've watched and added to my Letterboxd profile, Mathis has seen like some fucking movie that is like the weirdest movie that you've ever seen that like makes you tired to watch, that makes you wonder what's wrong with the people inside the movie that they had to do this movie. Like, I don't know. That's what Rotten Popcorn is. Also, Mel draws cool ass pictures all the goddamn time, and you just get them if you sign up. And merch, same deal. And if you are so rich that $10,000 is nothing to you, then why don't you come sneeze on patreon.com/ChilluminatiPod, and Jesse will debase his beliefs for you. He will compromise his morals.
We had a test run of that last week. Kind of didn't go well. Jesse couldn't let go of his morals for very long.
He will compromise himself rhetorically.
That's because no one paid. I'm not going to compromise myself for free.
Yeah, that was the demo version.
It was a test run. You know how this works. You got to give them the good stuff first.
I gave them a little bit. They got a little bit of it, and I'm going to let you know you can get more, baby.
That was the PlayStation Magazine demo disc.
The PlayStation Magazine? Yeah, you got to get the demo disc, the one with Metal Gear Solid on it.
No, dude, I'm an AOL demo disc. I'm an install disc that comes for free.
Oof.
And you can use me all you want, but I'm not going to unlock anything good unless you pay.
You
want
to know something crazy? Omega Boost is such a good video game that everybody who had the demo had enough.
I don't even know what that is. Omega Boost. What the fuck
Omega Boost? Why don't you ask Eiffel 65, bro?
I owned their CD.
I am blue.
I had X a CD. Files.
You don't remember the song about the PlayStation?
I'm gonna play the games on PlayStation all day.
No one knows that song but you, dude. Because no one listened to more than one of their songs.
I did.
I guess that's one of those big country hits that Mathis knows that I missed on my negative knowledge.
My negative knowledge.
That's why I know the PlayStation game.
I owned like total of four CDs in my life. I bought a huge radio with my first paycheck ever.
And one of them is Eiffel 65s?
And I owned, yep, I owned that. I owned Astro Lounge. I think I've said a million times. I had Will Smith's like Willennium CD. And I had a Creed CD.
Oh my God.
You know the one with the clay guy coming out of the ground?
Yeah, I do know it.
Yeah, yeah. That one.
Oh my God. You were like a Roxy store in the year 2002.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
What the fuck is a Roxy store?
You were the guy who picked out the soundtrack for Inside the Roxy Store. That's the girls only Quicksilver brand. Where were you? Where are you? What are you doing? Are you in the mirror universe? Is this like Fringe?
No, just Rhode Island. Rhode Island's not got a lot going on, you know?
That's true. It just doesn't got a lot in general. Like it's going on or not. There's not a lot of Rhode Island.
Top to bottom, 45 minutes. That's all it takes.
This is a Patreon advertisement for patreon.com/Illuminati Pod. Go off.
And go to theyeti.com/Illuminati for those collectible coins. And a new t-shirt is launching on the 5th of February. It may or may not be that awesome Mel design that she had temporarily out there. The cat, the Friday, the Chilteenth. Okay, boys. It's part two today. Do you remember last week? Do you need a...
How could I forget?
Yeah, you know, the Dulce facility.
The Dulce de Leche.
The Dulce facility, as I may have said early on. Last week in the part one of this two-parter of the Dulce facility, what that was really just kind of a breakdown or a kind of a general idea of what this place is, the floors that are kind of have that it has with the different species on it, and what is, you know, kind of going on in there, along with a few notable names that were able to provide, quote unquote, and I say provide with heavy quotations, this information after being in the actual base itself. But today, as I promised last week, we're going to talk details. We're going to talk intrinsic details as to what is actually going on at that base. The rebellion that I talked about that we briefly mentioned last episode, including the name of a reptilian that helped them form the rebellion to get out of there, and how our dear
Sebulba.
I mean, hold on to that.
Sebulba.
Hold on to that. You maybe not. This is and then in the end, we're talking about how he gets out, and then we're going to talk a little bit about how maybe Dulce does exist, but it's much closer to an Area 51 style thing, where Area 51 was denied to exist for a long time until they eventually admitted it. Dulce may be similar in that it may actually be just not like a huge alien base, but a military base where maybe they test technology. And a lot of this story is padded with a lot of nonsense purposefully so that nobody worries about what actually is happening in Dulce, New Mexico. And I don't know if you guys have gone to the subreddit since last week, but two or three people who live in that area talk about all kinds of shit that actually happens out there in Dulce. It's interesting. I don't know if you read any of it. Did you?
I caught a bunch of it. I feel like saying that it might be more like an Area 51 situation is kind of like a loaded thing to say because
okay. I mean an Area 51 situation in that it exists, and I'm leaving it at that. No more than like I'm not saying aliens are there or technology is there, only that it is a government facility that truly actually exists.
Yeah. I'll take that. I'll buy that for a dollar.
I'll buy that for a dollar. Good. That's a reference for a movie I haven't seen. I just don't know what movie.
RoboCop.
You still you haven't
RoboCop, seen RoboCop, right? Yes, that's right. That's right. I've never seen RoboCop. I played the game though, and it was really good.
He was like, "I'll play the PS5 game instead."
Yeah. It was good.
He's like, "That's probably good."
Don't give me that look, Jesse. I didn't do anything wrong. RoboCop isn't really necessary cinema. Let's be real.
I'll tell you this. RoboCop is a 10 out of 10, and that's all I'll say. You don't have to watch it if you don't want, but if you don't like 10s, then, you know, that I don't know what to tell you.
You've never seen Red Foreman shoot a man's entire body off. The fact that it hasn't happened to you is shocking.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. But I also didn't watch that 70s show. So.
But hey, you knew who Red Foreman was, so that says all you need to know.
It's true, I did.
The best scene in RoboCop is the one where the guy gets shot in the van and he runs into the toxic waste. And then the toxic waste like goes through the van and then he climbs out the back of the van. And he's like a toxic waste zombie now.
Oh, and then minutes later, he's like, yeah, he gets hit by a car. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he gets hit by a car and like shredded into pieces. Yeah. RoboCop fucks. And it's like a satire.
It does sound like fun. And I'll have to watch it. I'll put on the list of things to see when I hang out with you guys when I go.
Blu-ray.
We'll watch it when I get down there. Today, though, it's not RoboCop. It's the Dulce facility. A much more interesting topic for conversation.
Or they're building RoboCop at the Dulce de Leche base. Shit. Which sounds pretty sweet to me.
It does indeed. last week was kind of an attempt to put together.
Time out.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
No one could see this. This man looked directly to camera. He was like, it sounds sweet to me. And then stared at the camera for 30 seconds of uninterrupted eye contact. Mathis moved on like it was nothing. But
I have to, man. Nobody can see this other than us.
I can't let that slide.
What's the point of doing this if we can't have the time of our lives?
This man literally made a terrible pun and then looked at me because Mathis was moving on. Looked at me for like support.
Sometimes when you want to laugh, you got to follow the advice of Britney Spears. You know what it is? You got to work, bitch. Remember that song?
No.
Work, Bitch by Britney Spears. What else you want to talk about?
Everyone knows that song.
What else you want to talk about today? Dulce Base.
Yeah, well, Dulce de Leche Base, please. So last week, I kind of put together a general idea from multiple sources, from various people who have heard things, who have read things, who have seen things, but only one individual claims to actually have been within the Dulce facility, to actually have seen its floors and actually know what's operating within there. And that man is a man we mentioned last week, a man by the name of Thomas Edwin Costello. And today, we're going to go over pretty much all the details he gives out. He has supposedly pictures, the Dulce papers supposedly come from him. And there was only ever one interview that was leaked, and I could only find it on the website auricmedia.net. So just understand this is some secret, deep down, you know, hidden information from the government that's totally filled with truth. And don't worry about questioning any of it.
It's just chilling on a .net.
It's just chilling on a .net somewhere. It's
using that Frodo and Samwise Gamgee security method.
Really?
Just sending that in the most unexpected of places.
It looks like a GeoCities website, as most of these sources typically do. So we're going to look back real quick at who Thomas Edwin Costello was. This man was a former security technician employed by the Rand Corporation, and Thomas claimed to have worked
the Rand Corporation from Marvel Comics?
yeah, them, exactly. He also claimed that he worked deep within the bowels of the Dulce facility, a place so secretive that its very existence is the stuff of legend. The early years of Thomas painted a picture of an ordinary man with a very, how he claims, an extraordinary destiny. As a young sergeant stationed at Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas, Nevada, his life was, you know, just typical military fare. His role as a military
point of order as a human being in this life. If anybody tells you that it's their destiny to do anything, just peace out. Just don't.
What if they just say they feel like they didn't realize they were going to have an extraordinary destiny?
That's the same. That's exactly the situation I'm describing. You should get on a Greyhound bus out of that town, ski daddle, the figurative town. Stay home. Don't give up your home.
Maybe buy some residencies and settle down. Settle down in that town and live in a land where, you know, your destiny is extraordinary.
I don't know about that.
He had a role within the military as a military photographer. However,
Mathis might be sociopath.
No, I'm not. But he says being a military photographer gave him top secret clearance that literally led him into the world far removed from the mundane normality that he was accustomed to.
Is the logic on that just like, I mean, somebody's got to take pictures of the secret stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of the logic.
Who do you think it is?
Pretty much.
Me.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like. And that's how I beat Shaq. Yeah.
Thomas's journey into this world of the insane began with a transfer to West Virginia, where he trained in advanced intelligence photography. Working inside a mysterious underground installation, his clearance was elevated to TS4, a level that basically was like the secrets beyond secrets beyond secrets. The stuff that even the president doesn't know about, super secret tech coming from quote unquote the brightest minds in the country.
I thought you had to pay L. Ron Hubbard like $30 million to get that high up.
Well, he's dead now.
No,
so.
No, 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 no.
It's fine. Yeah.
No, all you gotta do is watch one episode of, guys, I know it's South Park. Hot time, I just want to let you know an old man moment just happened there.
just got the name of South Park?
I know the name is South Park, and I was going to say you just got to watch one episode of South Park, but what was about to come out of my mouth was you just got to watch one episode of Those Boys in Colorado.
Those young whippersnappers out there in the snow holding it down and saying all those swears.
I don't know what's. I don't know why. Instead of just saying South Park, I was like, "Got the boys in Colorado." Like somehow that was.
Where's my nephew, Derek? Get me a Werther's.
As you age, your brain just changes, and you can no longer remember things as they are.
Like I remembered it, and it was. It wasn't like I forgot it. Thing. It was literally. I just instead was like, "Go ask them boys in Colorado." Like somehow that was the same.
You're that dude in Napoleon Dynamite who's just like.
It was in 1971 that Thomas's career took a pivotal turn. It's in this year that Thomas was offered a position within the Rand Corporation, serving as that said security technician. He relocated to California, where they had a significant presence, and his security clearance reached brand new heights. Upgraded to what else but security TS5. Clearance Ultra 3.
So he went from TS4 to Ultra 3?
Yes, he went from TS4 to Ultra 3. Correct.
They get a new guy who came up with the names of the levels in between?
Maybe. Well, it's early 70s, you know? What were comics in that era? Like, what were comics like in the early 70s? Could they write something like this?
Yeah, I mean, look, where Rand was at, Iron Fist in the 70s was like the time when it really shouldn't have been a white guy doing a bunch of real cool stuff.
Rand, I'm curious, Corporation. Yeah, Rand Corporation's real.
No, the Rand Corporation's a real thing, but he's talking about Danny Rand.
No, I know he's talking about the Iron comics. Fist. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I saw the Rand Netflix Corporation, show. Which is a very real corporate. That's a very real thing that may or may not be just as bad as the Danny Rand story from Netflix. So, like, you know.
It's like, isn't it like a think tank?
It is. And some of the shit that comes out of there is truly awful.
Yeah. Surprise. Oh. So again, he supposedly had to like work there. He's hired as a security technician. His new security clearance is Ultra 3, which, you know, basically paved the way for what was about to happen to him a few years later. Because in 1977 would mark the year that changed Thomas's life forever. He was transferred to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and his role evolved into something unprecedented. As a photo security specialist in the Dulce installation, Thomas was responsible for the maintenance, alignment, and calibration of a vast network of video monitoring cameras throughout an underground complex so secretive that its purpose was known only to a select few. Obviously, the Dulce facility. And upon his arrival in Dulce, Thomas, along with several other new recruits, was subjected to a chilling indoctrination. They were introduced to what Thomas later referred to as the big lie. The claim that the facility's subjects used for genetic experiments were irreversibly insane and that the research conducted was for medical and humane purposes. That is what he considers the big lie. That is not true.
Okay.
As Thomas settled into his new role, go ahead, Alex.
That's please. Just not the big lie that I'm familiar with, but
no,
that's
we're
fine.
In a different time. They're in a different time. Remember, this is coming out like in 2014, this interview is leaking like in the 80s or 90s, I think. We just know it went online in 2014. So, you know, just not quite the same as what we know right now. As Thomas settled into his role, the facade of Dulce began to crumble. His job, escorting visitors and maintaining surveillance, brought him face to face with some of the facility's darkest secrets. The base, he discovered, was a hub for joint alien / U.S. government operations, a fact that was as exhilarating to him as it was terrifying. And his initial encounters with extraterrestrial beings, greys and reptilians alike, while thrilling, dangerous, equally so. Yet, as he delved deeper into the labyrinth of Dulce, he realized that the reality was far more sinister than he had even come to believe on his own from just his interactions. The facility, shrouded in secrecy, was a place where ethics and morality were abandoned in the pursuit of unspeakable scientific, quote-unquote, objectives. Thomas Edwin Costello's time at Dulce Base was marked by an escalation of disturbing discoveries, but none more so than his experiences on the sixth level of this multi-leveled complex, infamously known as he dubs it, quote-unquote, Nightmare Hall. So level six of this giant multiplex, he's dubbed Nightmare Hall. This is what the heart of this Dsalsay facility is supposedly like. A place where the most unimaginable experiments were said to occur, far beyond the scrutiny of the outside world, held to no rule or law. As Costello navigated the corridors leading to his clandestine level, the air felt would grow thick, and he immediately had a sense of foreboding. The doors to Nightmare Hall would open to reveal a labyrinth of laboratories and holding cells, each unveiling a new horrific experiment being done. According to Costello, Nightmare Hall housed a series of extensive laboratories where genetic experiments were conducted by a mix of human and alien scientists. These experiments were not just on animals, but on humans as well. He described seeing human-animal hybrids, we talked about that last week, manimals, biologically engineered creatures that defied nature's laws. Some resembled mythical beasts, while others were grotesque amalgamations of a species. You think like a chimera, and then you think like, what's that fucking anime? Alchemist, Full Metal Alchemist, where like that dog daughter, like horrifying amalgamation, like app. That's what I think of.
I don't know what you're talking about. That never happened, and it's not something to ever think about, dude.
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry. He would recount to, in this interview, rooms lined with tanks that were filled with an amber liquid where embryonic forms would floated, connected to life support machines. Some tanks held what appeared to be fully developed humanoid forms, exhibiting physical characteristics alien to any known species on Earth. A chilling aspect of Nightmare Hall, as per Costello's accounts, involved the use of abducted humans as subjects for these experiments. People who vanished without a trace from the Earth's surface found themselves in the clutches of the Dsalsay facility. And Thomas spoke of encountering disoriented and frightened humans kept in cells, awaiting their turn in the experimental labs for whatever diabolical experiment they were going to be subject to next. So a lot of the alien abductions, they're saying, is basically they're being brought to Dsalsay facility, whether that's the Greys taking them or maybe it's government psyops taking them off the streets. And I believe, if I remember correctly, Missing 411 sort of alludes occasionally that maybe the people going missing are being shipped off to government facilities, including things like the Dsalsay facility.
Yeah, the tunnels that mysteriously match up and then they go down a slide that leads them all the way to the Dsalsay base.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. But if you take the wrong slide, you're going to end up in the back room. So just be careful. but yeah, like he's saying all kinds of horrifying shit are being done here. And the people who are abducted, this is where they fucking end up. These individuals, he claimed, were subjected to the genetic manipulation, often resulting in painful and irreversible transformations. He recounted the despair in the eyes of these captives, a haunting reminder for him of the human cost that he could never forget of this facility. The sixth level also housed advanced technologies that were far beyond any known human capabilities or inventions. Costello mentioned devices capable of just simply manipulating DNA on their own, machines that could alter the very essence of a living being, and technology that allowed for the creation of life forms designed to specific specifications, which is one of the one things I'm like, oh, hey, we kind of just talked about that when we talked about the Greys and that dude that was a geneticist who made that post, supposedly, with heavy quotes and a pinch of salt.
The like famous Reddit post, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. One of the most disturbing revelations from Thomas was the existence of a technology that he simply dubbed a soul transfer machine.
The hell is that?
He described a process where consciousness was transferred from one body to another, effectively allowing an entity to just change bodies, prolonging their existence or acquiring new physical forms.
You know, the beginning of X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Dude.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one. Was it bad?
It's not worth seeing, but that's the plot.
Okay. Well, there you go. Well, don't they do that in Days of Future Past? They put Wolverine's consciousness back in time.
They do that in many things because it is the most sci-fi tropey sci-fi trope that ever was. In fact, you know the lovely movie Stargate, right?
Of it, yes.
So Stargate, that film, I'm just convinced 99% of modern day sci-fi comes from that movie. Like, yeah, when like you Dune look at people on Facebook and they're like, we just need med beds. They're going to get us med beds. I'm like, that Stargate? If you look at like the soul transfer, that Stargate. If you look at traveling through wormholes, that Stargate. Is that soft disclosure? It's a good question. I'm glad someone asked it.
That's good. I mean, media could be being used in soft disclosure, right?
I want to watch Stargate now. That would be
Stargate's great.
What if the soft disclosure was none of that, but Star Wars has been soft disclosure all along?
Star Wars?
I watched Stargate recently. I'm just saying. The best part of that is that, you know what? Not even... We should watch it on this show. Just so I can show you the best part of that movie is all the character names. When you realize what every character's name is, it becomes even funnier. It's
That's
so
what I'm
good.
Talking about. That I want to watch Stargate.
But what, Jesse, but what if soft disclosure is none of that, but soft disclosure has been Star Wars the whole time?
That's not true at all. If soft disclosure is Star Wars, I'm disappointed in the aliens already.
I would get religion. I would get religion if Star Wars was real. Yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, the overarching theme in Costello's description of Nightmare Hall was basically just the utter disregard of any ethical boundaries. Anything was allowed as long as it was in the pursuit of knowledge and power, and basically all of that had eclipsed any moral considerations that anybody was doing here. The scientists and beings working in these labs, whether motivated by curiosity, duty, or darker desires, participated in activities that were not just scientifically audacious, but just simply morally bankrupt. And for Costello, Nightmare Hall, like discovering this place, was his turning point. The atrocities that he witnessed there said haunted him forever and propelled his decision to become a whistleblower. The burden of carrying these secrets was too immense, he says, but Thomas believed the world needed to know the truth about the dark underbelly of the Dulce facility. So, you know, that's the turning point for this man overall. In the depths, however, we'll talk a little bit more about the actual, what he claims were the aliens that were living there and their interactions. Because we talked a little bit about last time, but in the depths of the Dulce base, according to Costello, lay secrets not just of advanced technology and unethical experiments, but also of just interactions with extraterrestrial beings. His accounts provide a vivid depiction of the various alien species that purportedly collaborated with humans in this facility. The most frequent one encountered are, obviously, the Greys. In Dulce Base, as per Costello's account, were the Greys, and these beings, known for their distinct large head and dark almond-shaped eyes, were often seen working under the direction of human scientists in other species. Thomas described them as a somewhat subservient, engaged in various technical tasks throughout the facility. The Greys were involved in many of the genetic experiments, he claims, handling intricate procedures that required precision and skill. Costello noted that despite their advanced technology and intelligence, though, the Greys seemed to lack emotional expressions, carrying out their duties with a mechanical efficiency. They kind of just were like the subservient collaborators, essentially, the Greys ended up being here in Dulce.
It's just so funny how the Greys just kind of like fill whatever yeah. role. They're like Goombas. They're like the fucking, they're like,
oh,
just
my
little.
Oh God, that's genius. They're the alien Goombas.
Yeah,
fuck.
They're just like little, there's whatever, they're like little Lego guys. I don't know, like whatever they need to be, like the foot soldiers, they're the Greys. Or like if it's like, you know, there's like a spaceship and there's a bunch of different species on there and one of them's the trash guys, you know it's going to be the fucking Greys.
But the Greys are also the only one that are like, the Greys are also the only ones that are out there like, jerking people off.
That's what I'm saying. Does that sound like a job you want to have?
But why give it to the Greys? If they're like these subservient biomechanical people, why are you giving them the orgasm machine to use? Why not use it like with the reptilian?
Because if you're it's the same thought as, why don't most people want to go off and like jerk off a cow?
Right.
Listen, I am a proponent that the farmer should dress up as a cow for the cow's own mental stimulation.
Okay? No, I'm just saying the same reason why people aren't trying to like...
they see us as cows.
Get in line to help dolphins impregnate each other. You know what I mean? Like, it's... To them, we would be weird. It'd be weird to do. It wouldn't be hot.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, we're the animals to them.
Yeah, we're the strange creatures.
But they got psychic power, so like, make me see something that's not real. Make it more fun. But if you're not going to, I mean, like, listen, I'm not saying that has to be the, like, a barrier to entry. If you can't do that and you still want to take me, I'll go. I'm just saying, if you can give me a mental image, bonus on top. That's all. Like, make it more enjoyable. Then we've got the reptilians. These guys are kind of known as the dominant force within the base. They're more formidable and commanding than the Greys by a long shot. And Thomas described these beings as having an imposing stature with scaly skin and an air of authority. They were the true overseers of the more critical and sensitive projects within Dulce. The reptilians, as portrayed by Costello, were not just another alien species. They were politically and militarily powerful as well, exerting considerable influence over the operations of the base. They appeared to hold a higher rank in the extraterrestrial hierarchy and were often involved in high-level decisions and negotiations. Thomas recounted witnessing meetings between human military leaders and reptilian representatives, often discussing matters that seemed to go beyond mere scientific collaboration. He hinted at a complex alliance with Earth's own governments, deeply entangled in a web of interstellar politics and power plays. Like, you know, reptilians are basically the commanding ones. And then within the reptilians, among them, there was a particular subset of reptilians also known as the Draco, which in other alien lore, Draco and reptilians are totally separate. Here, reptilians and Draco are a subset of reptilian. These beings were described as even more enigmatic and powerful, possibly the ruling class of the reptilian species. The Draco were seldom seen, but were believed to be the puppeteers orchestrating much of what occurred not only in Dulce, but in other similar installations around the world. Costello's description of the Draco conveyed a sense of ancient wisdom and a formidable power. He speculated that they might have been involved with Earth for much longer than any other extraterrestrial species, possibly guiding the course of human evolution and history itself. And these guys are explained as having like smoother scales, a little paler in their color, not bright green like a typical lizard. They look a little bit different, but beyond, they're again, the ruling class. And they're the reason they've been here forever, man. They've been here longer than we were, even things. And then, of course, we've got the ethereal beings that we kind of hinted at last week a little bit. In addition to the Greys and the reptilians, Costello spoke of encountering other less tangible entities. These beings were harder for him to define, often appearing as ethereal or semi-transparent. Their presence in the base was one of the most closely guarded secrets, with only a few high clearance personnel aware of their true nature. So even Thomas having an Ultra 3 level classification, he wasn't even be allowed to know what their true nature was. He just kind of encountered them occasionally. Even he tried to figure out what their origins and intentions were, but he could never figure it out. But he sensed that these ethereal beings were of significant importance to the activities within the facility itself. Their interactions with the physical world were limited, but when they did engage, it was with a purpose that seemed to transcend the mundane concerns of the base. Whatever the fuck that means. Thomas's words sometimes are a little bit on the vague side. But yeah, these ethereal creatures are kind of just like around. Don't laugh. Thomas's words are vague for his own safety. Okay, whistleblowers got to look out for themselves. And sometimes you can only leak safely an interview to auricmedia.net. So, you know, I understand. So there you go. There's like a rundown of the major races, really just three of them. Now, granted, we have stories and supposed sources say Nordics and all of them were in there as well. But according to Thomas, this is the only things that he saw while he was there. And he's the only one that claims to be from the base as a whistleblower who worked there. So you kind of, you know, if you're going to take anybody's word on this for fact, it has to be Costello's. However, we have no evidence, obviously, beyond the Dulce papers that are heavily contested or whether are like actually real or not. So then we move into the era that Thomas Costello talks about, the kind of the conflict in revelation that he has, where he begins to build this rebel alliance. See, Star Wars soft disclosure. He builds a rebel alliance, dude, to fight back against the evil empire of Dulce Facility. Fuck, Star Wars was right all along, dude.
There's never been another story about a plucky band of rebels.
No, it's only Star Wars.
Yeah.
No, only Star
Wars.
Have
you heard of a movie, brand new movie, fresh idea? It's called Rebel Moon.
Oh, shit. I have heard of it. I have not seen it.
Yeah.
I want to watch and then make the angriest video because I know I'm going to hate it.
I love Sucker Punch, so I'm just kidding.
Should we watch it together?
I would love to watch that movie.
If it's Zack Snyder, I'm assuming all style, no substance.
It'll be garbage.
Like, yeah. Gorgeous cinematography, plot that makes no sense.
Yeah, they should make a movie. He should make a movie about Dulce Base.
So Costello's, like, tenure at Dulce Base, or Dulce Facility, whatever the fuck you want to call it, was not just, like, a journey through the physical depths of a secret facility, but also became a descent into a moral abyss. The
sick, twisted mind of its creator.
Oh, fuck. Dude. Oh, Air Hypnosis. He would definitely have been there at Dulce Facility doing some weird shit.
He's like, I just got back from Argentina.
Did you know the 8-ball is different there? It's just like, you know, the torture and then the drugs, because he made the 8-ball machine and then drugs.
I remember the whole bit.
Is there 8-ball? Is there a drug? Or you call a speedball and drugs? I don't know. I don't do too many drugs.
It's all right. Don't worry about it. Like you've okay. never sounded
educate me. I want to know what
you've
it's
never
called.
Sounded anyway, more like a narc in your life than right now. So don't worry about it.
This moral quandary for Costello really drove him from this point on. The realization of what truly was transpiring within the walls of the space, far from the eyes of the public and under the guise of national security, shook his very beliefs. And day by day, as Thomas navigated the complex network of Dulce's levels and interacted with its unusual inhabitants, he began piecing together a disturbing picture. He observed the treatment of the human subjects and the alarming nature of the experiments, the ethical lines that were crossed in the name of it, blah, 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 advancement, collaboration, the usual with the extraterrestrial beings became increasingly apparent to him. Thomas's conscience was deeply troubled by the plight of the human subjects, many of whom seemed to have been abducted from their just regular lives, only to find themselves in the grip of the nightmarish reality of Dulce facility. The screams that echoed in the hidden chambers of the base, the look of despair in the eyes of the captives, and the secretive discussions he overheard among higher-ups all pointed to a sinister agenda far beyond mere scientific research. And haunted by what he had seen and learned, Thomas covertly reached out to a few like-minded individuals that he had come to know over his time working within the base. This group comprised not only of sympathetic human workers, but also a few alien entities.
Several metahuman participants. Including Professor Xavier.
That would be fucking sick. Particularly, though, they were from the lower echelons of the reptilian caste, who seemed equally disturbed by the direction of their leader's actions. Don't you laugh, Desi? What? How dare you doubt?
I'm not laughing.
How dare you doubt?
I would never doubt the caste system of the reptilians.
Right.
Clearly, they've had millennia to work on it.
And it's working out great for them, clearly. They're in control of our military. These clandestine meetings were fraught with danger. The base's security protocols were stringent, with surveillance and monitoring at every turn. A mere whisper of dissent could lead to severe repercussions, yet the group was driven by a moral imperative to expose the truth. In the narrative recounted by Thomas Costello about the Dulce facility, there is a figure that comes to that we actually get to learn the name of. The reptilian that you said was Sebulba was a name?
Idoa.
His actual name was Shal.
I'm sorry, I'm looking this up. How do you spell that?
Yeah, I got you. Hang on. I'm going to copy paste this for you.
You can't just say it?
I'm just going to. It's
a secret?
S-S-H-H-A-A-L.
Shal.
That is the name of a Bakuran from the Star Wars universe.
Or you just call him Hal for short, you know? Shal.
Shall we dance?
You might be saying, what are lower caste members of the reptilian species? What do they do at the Dulce facility? What are your guess? What do you think lower caste members of the reptilian species specifically?
So there's still like a high class among the other species,
mm-hmm.
but we're talking about like the lower end. So maybe like an assistant or like a,
okay. They walk like around with like a little pad.
Yeah. Or middle management types.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
People who take meetings that their bridge bosses would like to skip to do fun reptilian golf tournaments and things.
Honestly, they'd probably enjoy if that was the case. Because the lower echelon of the reptilian caste, this man was a janitor.
Okay.
Shaw was just a janitor.
Okay, because that fucks me up because I would have imagined for sure that the Greys would have been the janitors.
Right? No, yeah. Yeah, see, I had that thought too when I was like, wait, but I thought they were, I don't know, maybe the caste system, it's just the way it works there. Yeah, Shaw was a reptilian janitor worker. And he kind of emerges as an unlikely but key participant in the covert resistance against the base's clandestine activities. Here is a more detailed look at Shal's involvement as per Costello's account.
I had to look this up really quick. So I wanted to look this up because I was trying to figure out like who would serve as the lowest caste. I think it's very similar to kobolds and dragons.
Well, yeah, because you got the Draco, the reptilians, and then these guys are probably like
kobolds, little like kobolds. The goons. They're like
little trash man dragons.
Yeah, the kobolds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, according to Costello's account of his experiences, he mentioned meeting the reptilian janitorial worker just while he was working. And he met him, bumped into him. They kind of had a conversation, and things kind of led to how they both don't like how certain things are happening here. The reptilian named Shal, according to Costello, was part of the lower caste of reptilian species working at Dulce and was sympathetic to the plight of the human workers and the victims of the experiments being conducted here. Shaw's involvement was significant because it suggested a complexity and diversity of opinions and attitudes among the reptilian beings that Costello initially thought wasn't true. He thought all the reptilians just hated humanity. So meeting Shaw and meeting the lower caste, he's like, oh, you guys are just as oppressed as us humans here. There's a common portrayal of them as a uniform, like they could see them as like a uniformly malevolent and dominating species, the reptilians. Even the lower caste saw the iron fist that they ruled with. Costello described Shaw secretly formed. He described how Shaw helped him secretly form a group of like-minded humans and other reptilians who were disillusioned with the activities in the base and willing to support the human-led rebellion. The inclusion of Shaw in Costello's story, shall we call, just brings kind of an interesting dimension to Dulce Base. And I kind of wish that he had mentioned other names as well and what they did, because he mentioned that Shaw was key in bringing on other reptilians, but I would have loved to know more about them. We just don't learn anything about anyone else other than Shaw and that he was a janitor, and that's all we know. The pivotal moment for them both came when Shaw directly ended up approaching Costello, and this was highly unusual and risky for any reptilian to do, given the strict segregation and the rules against fraternization within Dulce. You know, the strict, you do not talk unless you're only doing like working with somebody by appointment or research. Otherwise, fucking stay away. Don't talk to anybody. They were afraid for information sharing, I imagine, or something along those lines. But it was in this, when he approached him, that he told him all about his awareness and disapproval of the base's activities, which began forming this clandestine group. Shaw revealed to Costello also that he had actually already formed a small secretive group of reptilian workers who were disturbed by these unethical experiments. And this group, while limited in their capacity to affect change due to their lower status, would end up being crucial as well in providing information and support to the human-led resistance effort. So yes, Shaw had like a spy network within the reptilian hierarchy that would feed him information that he would then feed to Costello that informed the rebellion group they were forming at the time. The alliance between Costello, Shaw, and others was very dangerous. Communication had to be super discreet, and meetings were held in secrecy due to the omnipresent surveillance and the risk of punishment, as previously mentioned. And Shaw and his group risked not just their positions, but potentially their lives, as dissent was not tolerated within reptilian hierarchy. Shaw's he truly says that he was risking his life, that they could kill him for this if they ever found out. Whatever that fucking means, there's no evidence, obviously, but hey, you know, the guy was risking his life, and I salute the soul. You gotta respect it,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I respect this man. Shaw's contributions ended up primarily being in that information with the connection of his spy network. He provided insights into the activities of what the higher ranking reptilians were doing, their movements within the base, and potential opportunities for the human resistance to swing in and gather evidence before other eyes came into a room that had been recently emptied or something. His role was also pivotal in demonstrating that dissent existed among the alien ranks, challenging the monolithic perception of the reptilian species that Costello previously had. Shaw's fate, however, during the uprising and subsequent crackdown within Dulce facility is not really clearly detailed by Costello's account. His involvement in the events leading up to the rebellion paints a picture of cross-species collaboration driven by a shared sense of moral outrage and a desire for change, but what ends up happening to him is just kind of left out. We don't know. The story of Shaw as part of the base narrative for Costello kind of just like adds another layer of like storytelling complexity and more ambiguity and maybe even confusion to the story. But I don't know if this man is truly making it up, which obviously I think he is. I don't understand the point of bringing up this character and making this character and then just like not at all finishing the story.
You know what? Sometimes you just fall in love with an OC and you just gotta
don't want him to die.
You just gotta let it ride for a little bit. You know what I mean? You gotta let it be what it is.
You think Shaw was like Thomas's OC, like he like truly fell in love with this character? It's the only one with the name.
It sounds exactly like when I made a fighting game when I was 11 years old on paper and I just drew it with my hands when I was like super into Mortal Kombat trilogy. That's the name of a character that I would make. Shawl with two of each letter.
Except literally, for the L?
Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Very. Yeah.
Met this alien named X Sephiroth X and he was really cool, dude. He had a huge sword, bro.
We got to move on. The rebels, as they might, as we should call them, devised a plan from this point on to bring the realities of Dulce facility to the light of the public. Thomas was given his role in security, played a pivotal part in gathering evidence. The very documents and photographs that would later be known as what we mentioned last week, the Dulce Papers. So the Dulce Papers are things that he just scooped from the base before he left, according to him. Do you need a relink to that, the Dulce Papers, by the way? I got you. Don't worry.
I would love that. One. Yes.
I have that at the ready. Don't forget. It's at bibliotecapleiades.net.
.net, baby. /off limits/especially off limits. You see that?
Oh, yeah, at the very top, yeah. It's bibliotecapleiades.net/off limits/esp off limits.
Especially off limits. Super off limits.
So, this is the Dulce Papers. At the bottom, we have like five different images, a video that doesn't work anymore. And these are things, again, he scooped from the base, supposedly. So while you're looking at that, those are all government papers, quote unquote. Their plan with these Dulce Papers, I almost said Dulce again. Their plan was to leak this information to the public, to reveal the existence of the base and its egregious violations of human rights and ethics, and they'd hoped that public outrage and scrutiny would force the powers behind Dulce to cease their operations or at least bring them under regulation. That was like the goal, which is kind of a weird like goal, I guess. I just don't know why he didn't take pictures. Of some things.
I mean, there's the number one question.
He was the photographer for a while. Yeah. Like the man was camera ready for a long time.
Yeah.
It's just anyway, before we move on, I also want to give you a quick list of other bases that are all operating in similar styles, or at least where they're located, as well as a tunnel system that connects all of them.
Like Disney? Like yeah, the Denver Airport?
Across states. So in Utah alone, Salt Lake, Lake Powell area, Dark Canyon, Dugway Grounds, Modena, Vernal, all of them have exits as well. These are all entrances and exits to the area. And he says that Mount Arculeta, or Mount Shasta is a major site of alien elder race, reptilian race, and human meetings.
That's pretty close to us.
Hey, there you go. Beginning in Cleveland, Grover, every president in U.S. history has visited Telo City. Truman was supposed to have visited the lower realms as a high archon on Earth. He was supposed to have met the king of the world there and give him the keys to the USA, quote unquote. Mount Arculeta has a shuttle system that connects with other bases that moves through Mount Shasta and connects these other bases across the state and across states and cities.
I've never been more convinced that the internet was a mistake. This is the ramblings of a madman.
Are you sure?
Like what you're saying right now, any other time at any other point, if anyone had said this publicly, they would be laughed at. Like, this is goofy level now.
You're denying the truth that the government's hiding from us, Jesse.
Well, after Grover Cleveland, after Garfield went to go visit the king of the earth, and give him the keys to the United States. Like, that is nonsense.
I mean, you say what you will.
I don't know what to tell you.
I will say what I will. That's utter garbage.
Prove it's a lie. Prove to me it's a lie, Jesse. Go ahead.
You know what? That is the inherent problem with all this. Bam. I simply can't.
Exactly.
That's how we deal with facts here. They're true until proven false.
Yep.
Now, he had Ultra 3 level clearance. And he had heard rumors suggesting of lower levels that he needed Ultra 7 level clearance to access. He does say he wasn't able to get there, but he did hear a lot of talk. And he did say that he saw elevators that were, quote unquote, off limits unless you had Umbra or higher security clearance at the base.
Okay.
Which is TS4, even higher than Ultra.
TS4, Ultra 3, Umbra.
Yep. You got it.
This is like worse than Xbox. This is worse than Xbox.
What sucks about that is that like there's T3 and there's T3R. Like those are real security clearance things. There's, you know, phased and then there's like national agency check things and X's and but
okay.
It's like partial true, and then throwing in things like I had Umbra level. Like suddenly it's like, bro, you don't
it's
even
the
know.
Same thing as Shaul. Double, it's triple. The same thing as Shaul. It's like a little too edgelordy.
I'm going to post a snippet of the interview. I want one of you to ask the question and one of you to read.
Can you give me more information on the reptilian race? What do they do on the sixth level, the area called Nightmare Hall?
The worker caste does the daily chores, mopping the latex floors, cleaning the cages, bringing food to the hungry people and other species. It's their job to formulate the proper mixture for the type 1 and type 2 beings that the Draco race has created. The working caste work at the labs as well as at the computer banks. Basically speaking, the reptilian races are active at all levels of the Dulce base. There are several different races of aliens that work on the east sections of level 6. That section is commonly called the alien section. The Draco are the undisputed masters of the 5, 6, 7 levels. The humans are second in command of those levels. I had to argue with one large draconian boss frequently. His name is difficult to verbalize. I actually called him Karsh, and he hated it. The draconian leaders are very formal when talking to the human race. These ancient beings consider us a lower race. Karsh called me Leader Costello, but it was used in a sarcastical way. However, the worker caste is friendly enough, as long as you allow them to speak first. They will answer if you address them. They are very cautious beings and consider most humans to be hostile. They always seem surprised when they found many of the humans were open and trustworthy. There is no fraternizing with the aliens off hours. It is forbidden to speak to any alien race in the halls or an elevator without a clear business-oriented reason. Humans can talk to humans, and aliens can speak to aliens, but that is as far as it goes. At the worksite, however, it's different. There is free speech in the labs. The camaraderie found in the labs also reaches the computer bank section. In those areas, everybody talks to anybody.
I think they're sharing memes. Is that what's going on?
I think that's what's happening.
I don't know if the alien memes are very funny.
However, everything changes the minute you cross the threshold of the camaraderie found in the labs. Oh, wait. Cross the threshold of the hall. Instantly, all conversations become strictly formal. Hard as it was, several times I had to arrest someone simply because they spoke to an alien. It's a strange place.
And that is one answer to one question out of like 20 to 30 fucking questions.
And he just said that. He just spoke that. Definitely not a written line. Definitely spoke that out to a person who asked him. Formulated it in that way.
But, you know, that's to give you an idea of how this man kind of gave information out. But it gives a very detailed idea of the reptilian caste system. Do you feel more educated?
I feel like I have more information in my head. But they're about as educational as song lyrics. Okay?
That's a very nice way to put that. Yeah.
So, all right, we're done with just like listening to his. We'll go back to the actual outline of the show here. And we're moving into the ensuing chaos of the rebellion that was about to happen. Before the group could enact their plans, disaster struck. Somehow, the base's higher authorities got wind of the brewing dissent, and a crackdown ensued, swift and brutal. Costello described how, in an act of ruthless efficiency, a military strike team entered Dulce, targeting not only the human conspirators, but also any alien entities that were seen as collaborators. The corridors of Dulce, once the silent witness to covert atrocities, now echoed with the sounds of gunfire and panic. It was a kill on sight. Like I said, their lives were at risk. He was right. Like, the military came in and started putting people down. Thomas witnessed the fall of his co-conspirators one by one, though not of Shara, because we don't know what happened to him. The rebellion ended up being crushed right then and there, but it only solidified his resolve to now escape and take the truth to light. So they couldn't even get a rebellion off the ground. The rebellion was formed before they could make any action. They were found out and they were crushed. So now his only goal is to get the fuck out and get information out so he can share it with the people so that maybe something can be done about this facility. So in a harrowing flight from the base, Costello managed to evade capture, and with him, he carried the evidence that he had gathered, a testament to the unspeakable acts committed within the walls of Dulce. The burden of these secrets and the trauma of what he had witnessed would haunt him for the rest of his life. And Costello's story, as he told it, is one of a man who, despite the overwhelming odds, chose to stand against the juggernaut of hidden powers. His account of Dulce Base, a facility shrouded in mystery and horror, challenges the very limits of our understanding of morality and what humans are capable of. Gentlemen, do you see what the government is hiding from us? Do you see why we have to fight back?
I think I'm starting to glimpse it.
Yeah.
I don't see the why yet.
Because there's horrifying things happening in there. That's why.
Duh.
Yeah, but basically the why is because the government can't stop it, so they're like, well, we might as well just join in.
Sure. Yeah.
But then at the same time, they're like, we're also racing for alien tech. And we're also keeping this other side of it quiet. And also, like, the more you add, the more impossible it all becomes.
How dare you?
Fair.
So while people are being gunned down, this military strike team moving with ruthless efficiency through the Dulce facility, Thomas made his decision. In the midst of the chaos, he realized his only option was to flee. His intimate knowledge of the facility's layout, coupled with the confusion of the assault, aided his escape and avoiding being shot down dead. He navigated the maze-like tunnels, avoided patrols and surveillance, driven by a desperate instinct to survive and tell the world what he'd seen. As he made his way through the lower levels, Thomas encountered scenes of desperation. He saw other staff members and beings caught in the crossfire, struggling to comprehend the sudden outbreak of violence in a place that, despite its sinister nature, had always been meticulously controlled. Costello emerged, finally, from the Dulce base, not as a triumphant whistleblower, but as a haunted survivor. Burdened with the heavy weight of his experiences, he had witnessed the brutal suppression of a rebellion that sought to shine a light on atrocities hidden beneath the surface. His escape marked the beginning of a new chapter, one filled with paranoia of being pursued and the moral obligation he now carried to reveal the truth to the world about what our government was doing. The documents and evidence he managed to smuggle out, the Dulce Papers, became his legacy, a testament to the courage and horrors associated with one of the most enigmatic and controversial conspiracy theories of all time. The story of the uprising and its crushing defeat within the Dulce base, as narrated by Costello himself, leaves us with a chilling portrait of resistance in the face of an overpowering shadow authority. It's a reminder of the lengths to which such powers might go to preserve their secrets and maintain their agendas and control the human population with a fist, like Iron Fist, and regardless of any ethical or human cost. Costello was a hero and a whistleblower who now found himself in exile. He narrowly escaped the deadly purge at Dulce. Costello found himself a man on the run, carrying with him the secrets of one of the most secretive installations on Earth. He was aware that his life was now constantly in danger, that he could never again lead a normal life. And in his exile, he released the Dulce Papers, hoping to shed light on the atrocities. The papers, filled with descriptions of advanced technologies, alien species, and horrific experiments, sent shockwaves through the UFO and conspiracy theory communities at the time. The story of Thomas Edwin Costello and the Dulce facility base remains one of the most enduring and controversial tales in the conspiracy theory library. Skeptics question the veracity of his claims for good reason, pointing to the lack of concrete evidence and the absence of records confirming his employment or even his existence. And believers, however, view Thomas as a courageous whistleblower where the military wiped out his past and pretended he was a nobody while making fun of him and performing covert psyops on him to keep him confused and paranoid.
Don't you hate when people do that?
I do.
Wait, so you're telling me, time out. Well, let me get this straight. I could go around, like right now on this podcast, I could announce that I, in fact, served 4 tours of duty. I was a well-decorated soldier. I was in Vietnam, the Iraq War, and the War of 1812. I have been involved in many top secret things. And here's the thing, guys. I saw the Dracos and the Greys, but you're just going to have to trust me on this. All the evidence was lost, and my military record was expunged because the government's trying to silence me.
No, you're one step behind.
I'm actually very important.
No, he brought...
And don't look it up because there's nothing to look up. The records have been
expunged. He brought the Dulce Papers, though. He's got 25 pages of... documents. Do you have 25 pages of documents?
I just
documents.
I mean, I have 20. You know what? Behind me, I'm pretty sure I do. What kind of documents? Who? You know what? The government.
Government illustrations of alien test tubes with test tube babies in there.
It just all seems very convenient for fakery. Is what I'm saying. Like it's so specific, and to say like this is the greatest secret man has ever kept, and I'm on the run. Question: this dude dead or alive?
I think he's dead now, if I remember correctly. Let me check.
I want to know how he was killed by the Dracos, is what I'm assuming. I assume he was ripped to shreds.
No. So I don't know why I'm looking. I know the answer to this. There's no evidence the man existed.
The man himself?
Oh, shit.
This is the real top secret stuff.
I believe this story more now because he didn't exist.
I'm like, you got me over here being like, why did he exist? Like,
you got me even more. That's amazing. So wait, the guy, we don't even know if he existed.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. So like, you know, as we look over the decades of people who've done research into this, they first look to see if there's any records of Dulce facility, these Dulce papers, where did it come from? Then they start looking into this guy's background, and then they realize they couldn't find anything, and they couldn't find any evidence that a man by the name of Thomas Costello even fucking existed.
Fuck yeah.
He was wiped, dude.
Fuck yeah.
I'm telling you, he was wiped from the record. The Dracos got him, dude.
I'm doubling
down. I believe now more that the Dracos got him, dude.
Fuck it.
Like, we only know this because of the leaked interview this guy had with somebody that is on auricmedia.net. So, you know, I don't know. Does that make it more believable?
And people would say, well, why release it to that website that no one's viewing?
Who believed it.
Here's the thing. That's the one they forgot to get. They got all the other sources. They had all the other things.
Yeah, yeah. He absolutely is just frozen.
Let's hang 10 for a minute.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to get frozen. They tried to stop me, but I'm back. I was saying that's the one they forgot to get. That's the one they like of all the websites. That's the one they forgot to cleanse. And that's why the interview exists there, because the Dracos got him, dude. The Dracos got him, dude.
It's surprising they didn't see auricmedia.net, but they got bibliotecapleiades.net.
Oh, they got all of them. Yeah. They went through, they got them all except for that one, because that's, That wasn't important. No one's going to that website, so they didn't even notice.
And now we're taking a microphone and blasting the truth. Costello's whole hope is happening right now.
Dude, we're the last. You know what? Actually, never mind. Dracos, I don't know shit.
Well, dude, listen, if you want to, yeah, like you show up my door, I'll serve you.
I, for one, welcome being an alien pet. I don't give a damn.
I'll smile. I'll like do little tricks. You tell me to like speak. I'll like start giving the Gettysburg
bowls.
Address. What better
trick
than
that? I eat from bowls all the time.
I fucking eat from bowls.
Dogs bark?
Yeah.
Dogs bark.
You give me a little bed in a bowl, and then you like watch me as I poo? Like,
bed in a
if
bowl.
Anything, I'm in the dominant position.
What if they give you like a little girlfriend, but it's not like a human girlfriend? It's like a robot they made that's like to just like sate you. You know, like, hey, it's a little robot.
What do you mean sate?
I mean, like, it's weird, but to be honest,
dogs hump when you want them to or not. Humans are gonna be the same way. You're being kept as a pet. You need some sort of outlet.
To be honest, I wouldn't care because they'd probably get me fixed, right?
Oh, that's true. I never thought about that.
So I'd be like,
it's just good pet ownership. It's just responsible pet ownership.
Spayed and neuter, dude.
I was gonna say, do you think they have their own version of like Wheel of Fortune or whatever, and then they have to like spay and neuter their pets or whatever? What show was it? Like, Wheel of Fortune?
Welcome back to the Fortune.
Right? And then, yeah, their host, Bob
Snorg,
he's like,
get your pet spayed or neutered.
This is like a picture of some humans that are just like happy.
Yeah.
Well, and that's it, boys. That's it for Dulce Facility. The two-parter is done. Thomas Costello's story is out there. There's a lot more. If you want to go read his interview, anybody who's interested, all the questions are answered in that unnecessarily overly detailed way. There's so much we had to just kind of like gloss over. So if you're interested, it's worth a read just for the fun factor. But yeah, we're done. That's it. Dulce Facility's done. We've talked about it for years. I'm so happy it's over. And it was super fun. I was super excited to talk about it. And I just forgot about the man not existing. That was just like complete mind blank.
That's the best part.
I love it.
Fuck
that's
yeah.
So funny.
All right. We're off to do a minisode for patreon.com/IlluminatiPod, as we always do. Thank you so much for everybody who's been supporting us over there, by the way. It's been amazing to have you guys just supporting us for so long. We've gotten a video minisode for all those at the right tier. Jump in, check out what we got. We got a lot of bonuses if you jump into the Patreon. and we'll see you over there. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Anyway, me and my wife were sitting outside indulging on our porch one night, enjoying ourselves. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I stepped back inside, and after a few moments, I hear my wife go, "Holy shit, get out of here." So I quickly dash back outside, and she's looking up at the sky in awe. I look up too, and there's a perfect line of dozen lights traveling across the sky.